So you've got a business, but what about a brand? The difference? More of you. Wix gives you the freedom to create your website, own your brand, and do it on your own, exactly how you envisioned it. Experience limitless customization. Boost your creativity and efficiency with AI tools for every part of your business journey. Scale up with built-in SEO, e-com, and scheduling features. Put more of you in your business. Go to Wix.com and do it all yourself.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. The email address, as ever, if you want to get in touch, is techtalk@newstalk.com. Now, one of the biggest headaches for consumers, and Garda Síochána, and businesses is the humble scam text message. We've spoken numerous times about the devastation it can cause from a financial and reputation point of view. And the key question has always been, what, if anything, can be done? Well, on Friday of this week, ComReg, the Irish communications regulator, provided a bit of an update. Ciara O'Brien of the Irish Times is with me now to run through the detail. Ciara, what do we know?
What we're going to have is a registry for companies that handle these bulk SMS messages that go out. So the likes of, say, come from your bank or come from a delivery company. And we've all had them where they arrive in and it looks like they're from a bank or it looks like they're from your local courier. And then it turns out actually it's a scam text. And this obviously has been a huge problem. I think it's worth about 115 million euro to scammers every year. You know, this is the kind of the cost of it. This is the cost for Irish consumers. So what's going to happen now is companies that handle these bulk SMSs will have to register the IDs with ComReg, and they'll have until there's a deadline put on this. So from the 3rd of July, anything that's not registered with ComReg will be labelled as likely spam when it's sent out. So if it arrives on your phone and that ID hasn't been registered with ComReg, it will come with a little tag that says this is likely spam. So it'll put people on their guard. And that doesn't matter whether it's a genuine company that hasn't registered its ID or it's a scammer. So people will just have to watch out for that little tag. And then from later in the year, from October, those messages are going to be blocked. So if you're not registered, those messages won't be able to be sent. So what it will do is it will protect consumers. And it's something that, you know, I think we've discussed this before. It's a simple thing that can be done to protect consumers, because at the end of the day, they're the ones that are being scammed. And the scams themselves and the frauds that are being carried out through these text messages, they're getting to the point where they're so sophisticated that even genuine text messages that are coming in, you know, everybody is kind of side-eyeing them, because I do it myself. I ignored a message from the bank because I thought it was a scam text. It was only when they rang me and it was a genuine number. And then even then I said, look, I'll call you back. And I rang the number that I knew, because that's the advice I would usually give to people. So this will protect consumers, but it will also protect businesses, because, you know, if you don't trust the messages that are coming from through your phone, claiming to be from these companies, whether they're genuine or not, you know, what's the point in them sending them out?
If this is such a simple and effective solution, why hasn't it been done before now?
That's the age old argument. Why does it take so long to do anything? You know, I mean, like there's things that have to be done. You know, there's procedures that have to be put in place. There's agreements that have to be gotten. At the end of the day, at least it's being done now. But hopefully that when the next scam arises, as it will, because this means that, you know, when once you cut off one avenue, it's like playing whack-a-mole. You cut off one and then the next one will pop up. Hopefully the next scams that are that become this prevalent will be dealt with quicker, and that the industry will get behind it and the regulators will all work together, because there's so many moving parts, I suppose. You know, you have to get everybody on the same page. But you know, I think the important thing is it's happening now, and, you know, by the end of this year, those scam texts should be a thing of the past, because they will just be automatically blocked.
Ciara O'Brien of the Irish Times, as always, thank you so much for explaining that to us. And hopefully that is the end of the scam text message. Now, if you run a business, you'll know all about the importance of having an online presence. But is every business owner equipped to do so? And what difference does the .ie domain name make? David Curtin of .ie is with me now to discuss. David, thanks a million for joining me. Can you start off by just introducing us to the work that you do at .ie?
So we're primarily the national domain registry. So we look after 330,000 domain names, just .ie's. On behalf of Ireland Inc., if you like. So the National Registry, but we're not just the National Registry. We do a lot of other initiatives, if you like, that are aligned with our purpose. So what we're aiming to do is to help Ireland thrive online. That means helping businesses, communities, towns, individuals to have a digital presence and to thrive online with that digital presence. So what else do we do? We run initiatives and programs that are about digital adoption. We do advocacy with government, and that's where we come across areas that highlight how government can help business, especially to do more with digital, to be more productive, to boost their sales, to cut their costs. And then thirdly, we've just set up a data analytics unit. We call it Team Xavier. And that team has the capability now to drill down into digital data. So whether it's about .ie domains or .com domains, but we can get a profile of e-commerce. We can get a profile of the cybersecurity, so internet security, so in particular web and email security, and how well they're doing in complying with internet standards, and other data that's of interest to, let's say, representative organizations or actually to government departments. So that's us, registry, advocacy, and new data.
The value of the .ie domain, it is something that when I'm talking about cybersecurity for people who are shopping online and so on, I'll always say to look out if it's a .ie address. And there are certain tips and tricks you can do to verify if a website is legitimate or not. Can you just tell me about the power of the .ie versus the .com or the .co.uk or the other dots that are out there?
Well, the big difference is really around how secure and how safe the .ie namespace is compared to, say, .com. And that security safety comes from how we manage ourselves and how we manage the registry. So first and foremost, when somebody applies for a name, we ask them for their connection to Ireland, and then we verify their identity. So with the company, we're confirming that they are who they say they are in the company's registration office. And if it's an individual looking to register their .ie, we're asking for a driver's license, passport, something that our utility bill. So that's the first thing we do. We're confirming who's behind the website or email address so the consumers don't have to worry. That's a good step. And then secondly, we employed a company called Netcraft, and they do continuous monitoring on the entire namespace. And they're tasked with looking for tech abuse. So that would be phishing, malware, that's on .ie websites. And what they do then is bring it to the attention of the registrar or the hosting provider and to the owner of the domain. So between them, then they can work out a fix. And that's very useful because a small firm, let's say a small solicitor's firm, may not realize that somebody has interfered with their website and is capturing their client's data. So that firm of solicitors would be alerted with the Netcraft service, and now they can fix the phishing event on the website. And then the third thing we have, which is really important, and that's to cut down on potential criminality in the namespace as well. So we have protocols with regulators and agencies that if something comes across their desk that's a problem on a .ie, they can work with our hosting providers to help address the issue. Now, that doesn't mean take down the name or suspend it, but might be something as simple as taking content away down from the web pages themselves that are problematic. So if you think of the medicines regulator, or a good one is the central bank, if somebody is offering loans that shouldn't be, then that's prohibited. Central bank would say cease and desist. So they would work with us to find out who's behind that website, and then engage with them to make sure that they stop offering loans, et cetera, that they're not authorized by the central bank to do. A lot of those, just we can work things out, or at least the registrant can work things out with the regulator, and they can, if it's an error, they can fix the error and then the site stays up. But if it's proven to be a breach of regulations, if they don't rectify the breach, then unfortunately that domain would be suspended and then eventually deleted. So there's three ways that .ie is actually safer and more secure than .com, where any domain you want, if it's available, you can just register it and you're up and running in no time to do what you want to do.
And it's great to hear, you know, the advancements and that interconnectivity, I suppose, between different bodies to ensure that the consumer remains safe when they're shopping online. I'm looking through your the report that you that was published earlier the week. It's the Profile Report of 2024. And I'm just wondering if, I suppose, there is an urban-rural divide when it comes to businesses that are investing in not only their domain names, but their website presence as a whole. Is it possible to get a breakdown from a geographical point of view? Like, again, did COVID see or cause a bit of an influx for people to register, particularly those who wouldn't have the footfall because perhaps they're more remote?
So we actually have a couple of stories that I would call stories in your question. And the first one is that if we look at the installed base of domain names, we can see that it's still predominantly Dublin, Cork, Galway, Limerick. So in the installed base, they account for 60% of the entire database. So let's call that their historical strength. And then there's another story that if we look at the new registrations, we see a very definite trend that the take-up of new domains is very much in the regions. And we actually see a slight decline in the main cities. So for instance, this time around, it was, let's call it the hinterland of Dublin. So we saw big growth in Meath, in Kildare, in Laois, you know, counties that surround Dublin. So you would say, what's going on there? Is that people working from home? Perhaps there's a gig economy from home. Perhaps there's, you know, some other artisan type activity, and they're setting up their websites in areas now where, you know, where they live. And we also see a cluster this time in Munster. So Clare, Limerick and Tipperary, actually, especially, where with new registrations, they're the ones that are topping the league table, if you like. 2 years ago, it was very much Galway, Sligo, Mayo. They were the ones who saw that little mini surge. So that's interesting, I think, because it tells you that the interest in digital is moving out beyond the urban areas into more, let's say, rural counties. Mm. And I say that with all due respect, that, you know, there are clusters of industry now setting up in areas outside the main cities. So previously, there was a digital divide, very pronounced, and we see indications that it has started to narrow. And I say digital divide because when people register a domain name, what they're effectively saying is that's their digital intention. They're going to do something online. So registrations are a good forward indicator of digital intention. And it's always interesting to look in 6 months, 9 months, 12 months later to investigate, did that intention come to something? And sadly, very often it doesn't, and you find at the renewal date, they just don't renew. So now the domain is deleted. You see others then that set up a basic website, and really it's just a picture postcard website, and it stays that way. But then, great from our point of view, we see those who invest in the website, and they really make it their prime real estate online. And you know that because you can see the tools that they're using, the plugins, how they're making their website more sophisticated, and that they really are using it for customer acquisition, customer engagement, and then selling online. Mm. So we get eyes on that kind of progression on clusters of domains as they begin life with an intention and then come through to you know, a sophisticated online presence.
And as we talk now in 2025, is there still room for growth in terms of .ie registrations, and do you think there's an appetite? We know that, I suppose, businesses are no longer local businesses anymore because, thanks to logistics companies, the world is a much smaller place. So is there the appetite, and is it still an attractive proposition to go for the .ie for the reasons that you outlined at the top?
I would say yes, there is still headroom for growth for .ie and for websites generally. I know that it's more popular to think that social media and social commerce is the way forward. And I think social media now has a role, don't get me wrong. It's great to drive traffic to a secure website, But I think it's really important that an SME business owner has control over their own e-commerce channel, and they shouldn't be reliant on third-party, selling platforms where the algorithms decide where the traffic goes. So I'd say have both. Have social media to get the customer's interest, but direct them then to your website where you're able to control your message, control your product, deal with any fake news, for instance, that might be out there on social. So definitely a role for both. But I would say do invest in a website. It's money well spent. You'll be building potentially a 24/7 salesperson. What would you pay on a salesman's salary? And think about that and say, look, would I put that into a website? That would be my main communication tool that would help me with leads, that would help me with bookings, that would help me with getting the right messages and offers out to customers.
My final question is around, I suppose, the education piece. Is enough being done to engage with the smaller businesses around this country to teach them not only the difference between, buying a domain name and hosting a website and creating a website and then getting eyeballs of customers on it? Like, do we still have work to do in that regard, particularly for the smaller businesses?
Absolutely. You've put it really well there. There is a huge amount of work to do. In studies that we have done, we're doing a program with DCU, Dublin City University, and it's funded by the Department of Rural and Community Development. And that's showing that a lot of our small towns, the businesses there don't have websites at all. They're using social media, but they don't have websites at all. And the ones that do have websites, they're not sophisticated. So there's evidence, hard evidence, that more work is needed. And in fact, in our pre-budget submission, we recommended that the surplus on the National Training Fund should be used specifically to help small business to upskill. And there's two components to that. One is teach their staff how to do digital, because let's face it, if business owners are older, with all due respect, I'm an older person myself, you're less inclined to handle new apps, new technologies, new tools, and so on. But your staff are using them privately. They're making videos, they're uploading them, they're engaging on social. It's second nature to them. So upskill them on using the tools, the tech, the apps and the tools that are suitable for business. And I think that the unspent surplus, it's almost 2 billion euro, that surplus could be dedicated to helping SMEs staff to use those tools to help the business boost their sales, increase their marketing, and improve their productivity.
Look, I do think, and I hope that, that investment does happen. And I do think there's still an opportunity to engage with people who might be that bit older, just to give them the skills and empower them. Because having played around with a bit of this myself, I know it's not rocket science. It just takes the patience, and it takes a patient person to engage and teach. But the rewards that it offers, particularly for whether they're self-employed or small businesses, are incredible. So fingers crossed that does happen. If you are a small business and you think this would be beneficial, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. But for the moment, David Curtin, thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Jez. It was a pleasure.
So you've got a business, but what about a brand? The difference? More of you. Wix gives you the freedom to create your website, own your brand, and do it on your own, exactly how you envisioned it. Experience limitless customization. Boost your creativity and efficiency with AI tools for every part of your business journey. Scale up with built-in SEO, e-com, and scheduling features. Put more of you in your business. Go to Wix.com and do it all yourself.